Welcome to this special masterclass. We've brought some of the top experts in the world to help you unlock the power of your life through this specific theme today. It's going to be powerful, so let's go ahead and dive in.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
I love the work that you do because you really break down these different types of strategies on healing trauma without medicine or medication. Can you share a few of these key ways to do this? If people are just getting started and they feel the sense of overwhelm, stress, and trauma in their body?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, whenever we're talking about trauma, it's going to be critical for us to first start with the body. So the very first place where we need to go to is our nervous system, because that's where trauma is primarily situated. So when we do any of the practices that are going to help settle our nervous system and help us feel more grounded, that's already going to be the best start that we have toward healing trauma. Then we can actually get into the digging work. What happened to you? What happened before you? What happened around you? What happened that actually left an imprint in your soul that made it so that you experienced this tenderness that we call trauma?
Really?
Yeah.
So we should be thinking about body and the nervous system first, not what happened to you at 7 years old.
No.
You know, what did your parents say to you that hurt you? We shouldn't be asking those questions first.
That's correct. You know, whenever we're actually approaching a therapy session, typically you sit down and the therapist asks you, well, what happened? Tell me why you're here.
Right.
And so you start spewing like your entire story. But very often, people actually feel traumatized or re-traumatized or triggered by their own stories and their own trauma narrative.
It causes a heightened nervous system response when you tell the story.
Yes, because it feels like you're going back there again, because you're telling all the little details of everything that happened and trying to get this person, this therapist or a friend or whomever you're recounting to, trying to get them to understand what happened. But your body's also remembering in that moment. And very often what tends to happen is that people then engage in avoidance strategies. Like they no longer want to touch the trauma narrative or their own story, or they drop out of therapy because they no longer want to actually engage in the conversation that felt so incredibly dysregulating.
Wow.
So
they're re-traumatizing themselves when they talk about the experience in the first time, I guess, right?
Yeah, because most people don't know that when they approach their own trauma narrative, that it can actually like spur up those emotions in them and cause their nervous system to go into that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn.
Wow.
Most people are not aware of the fact that just by telling my story, this can happen to me. But if we're actually training folks to engage in their body in a way that helps them to feel more safe, then it allows them to then be able to tell their trauma narrative in a way that actually in a way where they don't actually need to run away from themselves.
So when we're thinking about a way to heal initially, and we know that we've had some stress, or maybe we're reactive in certain situations, or maybe we feel tightness or just not our fullest, highest self, and we know that there's been some trauma, but we're not sure how to talk about it or how to heal it, what is something we should be thinking about with our bodies to start this process?
Well, the first thing is that we have to befriend our bodies. We have to actually engage in a relationship with our bodies and really tune in. Most of us don't actually take the moments throughout the day to say, how's my body feeling right now? Where do I feel the tension? Where am I experiencing in my body this external situation, right? And if we can actually train ourselves to just do body scans, for starters, right? There's so many things that we can do. But for starters, just scanning how we feel in our bodies from head to toe and just getting a sense of how our body is taking in our environments, that's already a really good setup for understanding ourselves better and understanding ourselves when we're juxtaposing ourselves with what's happening outside of ourselves.
So if someone has experienced a level of trauma, but they have no clue if they've actually got a lot of trauma, a little trauma, or somewhere in between, how can they do a trauma assessment within their body scan to know, oh, this is actually a big thing that I need to address right away, or this is more minor, but I still need to address it? How can they scan?
Well, you know, it's actually much simpler than what one might imagine, because people can actually just remember, right? Remember what they actually do remember. And then simultaneously try and gauge what's happening in their bodies as they're remembering.
As they're thinking of the story and the scenario.
Exactly.
Are you feeling tightness in your chest or your throat? Or are you clenching up? Or are you sweating?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, what are these symptoms?
Yeah. And typically, some of those symptoms correlate with how the nervous system is actually internalizing the story. We typically get a knot in our stomach, for example, right? But that's really our nervous system actually shutting down specific functions of the gastrointestinal tract.
Really?
Because we actually don't need that for survival in a moment where we're in survival mode. And so
if we feel a knot in our stomach, it's almost like we're in fight or flight mode.
Exactly.
Just thinking about, thinking about a story for 30 seconds or a couple of minutes from something that happened 10, 20, 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. So something that happened that long ago can continue to harm and hurt you decades in the future until we learn to heal it.
Exactly. It continues to live in the body. It can metabolize in the body then as chronic illness when it goes on unaddressed. And of course, one of the biggest risks and repercussions of it going on unaddressed, many times because we just don't know that it's there or that it's something that needs to be addressed. But what can happen is also the possibility of transmission into the next generation. So there's a lot of consequence.
Yes. And that transmission is really you leaving a legacy. You know, do you want to leave a legacy of peaceful, harmonious, emotional well-being, you know, humans as children or kids that carry your stress responses?
Right.
And kind of your nervous system responses, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I always ask parents, like, look at your little one and look into their eyes and think for a moment, do I want them to hurt the way that I have hurt? And that usually is enough for a parent to say, you know what? Actually, I want to break this cycle because I don't want their little heart to then absorb the kinds of traumas that I've absorbed.
Oh, man.
And for them to then be the adult that has to then be in search of their emotions or in search of healing because they now have an inner child wound as an adult.
What's the greatest gift a parent can give their child?
The gift of understanding their emotions and understanding how to self-affirm. Because when we can actually know what our emotions even are, and what I mean by that is that we have emotions and that they're body-centered, right? Like that we have a really concrete understanding of the full spectrum of our emotions and how they can manifest in our bodies. And then how we can actually do something to validate ourselves through the emotional process. I think that's a beautiful gift that parents can give their children. And when parents do that for themselves and their children, it's a beautiful generational gift.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So the first thing I'm hearing you say is kind of the ways to start healing is to first do an assessment of the stories and the memories that hurt you and see how the body reacts or responds.
Right.
What would be the next step after that? We notice a tightness in our stomach, a clenching in our throat, a pain in our chest. What would be the next step to starting that healing process?
Step two is relaxation. Mm-hmm. Step two is actually going into any kind of practice you choose, right? But it can be breath work, it can be meditation, it can be Tai Chi, it can be yoga, it can be so many that can actually help your body to release some of that tension.
Interesting.
And so what we're doing in that very moment is that we're, of course, recognizing that there's a pain that has been there, that has been emotional, that has now a physical manifestation, and that we're also integrating a relaxation, a body relaxation practice to help release that tension help absolve that tension from the body.
If we never release it, what happens?
It becomes disease.
Wow. So emotional memories turn into physical pain and eventually disease in some way.
Many of the metabolic conditions that we know about, diabetes, for example, cardiac conditions, a lot of those can be mapped back to stressors in life. And there's a lot of studies that have been done around even autoimmune conditions being very deeply connected to stressors and to trauma. And more recently, there's some studies that also have some correlates to certain cancers. So when we start thinking about what the body is telling us, the body, when it's in that state of disease, it's telling us, I don't feel well because I'm not being taken care of emotionally. And that, you know, it is usually like the clue for us to say, oh, I need to slow down, when we needed to slow down probably 15, 20 years ago.
Right. Mm-hmm. So once we, you know, recall the memories and I guess really reflect on where we're feeling this pain or reaction in our bodies, the third thing I'm hearing you say is to relax through some type of therapeutic process, breath work, meditation, yoga, some type of relaxation process to release it, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would be the next thing? Because a lot of times most people just numb or disassociate the pain, right? We don't truly feel the pain because it's too painful. And so we'll find ways to numb, distract, disassociate, block the memories to not feel that pain. And that can be just as harmful, right? Just to numb, block, or disassociate.
Can. You know, they're protective factors, or they're ways that we protect ourselves from the pain that we truly feel, and especially the depths of our pain. Some of us just don't want to understand how deeply hurt we have been.
How wrong we've been.
How
unfair, unjust, hurtful these things are.
Yeah. And you know, like in order to self-preserve, in order to make it through another day, the mind and the body, they're just brilliant like machines. They have mechanized a way to actually protect us from ourselves.
Wow.
And so they basically like structured all these coping mechanisms that, albeit harmful or maladaptive or not helpful or not connecting when we're talking about relationships, right, they can, you know, still help keep you safe for another day. But the alternative to that is to then learn coping skills that actually can be adaptive, connecting. And that can actually be the better recipe for not only your ability to stay within healthy relationships with other people, but also for you to experience the type of sustainable and long-term mental and physical wellness.
Mm. What's the next step after that? Once we start applying some of these self-therapeutic experiences, you know, it might be 10 minutes of breath work or some type of release. How do we get to a place of truly healing that wound or that memory? You know, how long does it take of us doing this over and over again? Do we eventually need to process in other ways through talk therapy or more intensified therapies? What's the solution to absolute healing? And is that even a thing?
Well, there isn't really a 100%, you know, type of healing that truly exists. I mean, I think that anything that leans in the direction of perfectionism is a myth, including healing, right? However, there are ways in which we can live a life that is filled with ease and peace more often than not. And a life in which, if triggers were ever to present themselves, that they would be just subtle and tolerable, and that we can have the actual tools, the sense of empowerment and agency over our own bodies and minds to actually release that process and move into the next thing that life has for us, rather than being stuck and frozen, which is what tends to happen with trauma.
Sure.
But the next step really is, you know, the way that I work is that I integrate a lot of these nervous system restoration practices for a long period of time with folks. And I've done it myself and with my family and with kind of everyone and in the book. But this actually is the lengthier part of the work, the actual grounding.
This can take months
or
years.
It can take months.
Right?
Yeah. It can. And, you know, sometimes I actually like to give it a bit of context, like for people who feel like, well, let's say, you know, that I want to do this work, but how much am I going to have to do in order to really...
Might be a lot. It might be a lot.
And that's okay.
And it might feel exhausting, and mm-hmm. it might feel overwhelming, and it might feel emotional, and it might feel, you know, like it's all consuming at times.
Yeah. All of the above.
Yeah.
And that's actually, I would even go as far as saying maybe not might, but it will, right?
Yeah.
That's
for a period of time.
Yeah, for a period of time. And it is survivable. Mm-hmm. And if you have the tools to actually help you to settle once things feel like they're getting really heavy, then it's going to make the experience more tolerable.
Right.
And you're not going to feel like you're thrown into the abyss of your like deepest, darkest emotions and have no way out. You're like in a black hole.
Yeah. And there's this, I don't know who's originally said this type of quote or this kind of phrase, but you'll hear people say, you know, what happened to you is not your fault, but it is your responsibility to overcome it, to heal it, to process it, to, you know, realize what it was and not let it consume your life.
Yes.
And I think what you mentioned about like higher self, like learning about our nervous systems so we can work with it to become our best, highest self as most often as possible, right? Mm-hmm. Which means having peace and harmony inside of us as frequent as possible, because that is our true nature, peace and harmony. And I think that's what it comes down to. What are you willing to do to create peace and harmony, to actualize your highest self as frequently as you can? Mm-hmm. It's not about perfection. You're not going to be this Zen person all the time, but that's a beautiful life, living in peace and harmony. Living in suffering and pain and agony and numbing yourself is not a beautiful life. It's a survival mechanism, which is useful for a period of time, but not for all of time. And so we just got to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And it's going to take doing some intense, painful work for a period of time for hopefully a lifetime of freedom afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, I like to always like help people understand that if you're, let's say that the work needs to take a period of 2 years, let's just say that you need to focus, you need to do nervous system restoration practices each and every day for a period of 2 years. You need to do journaling and some of the digging work and do talk therapy, and you need to, you know, engage in, you know, connections with people that help you feel at home. Mm. All of that needs to be a part of your process. Those 2 years, when you take into consideration the 40 that you've already lived that have felt awful, those 2 years feel like they're really worth it. If you want to live the next 40 mm-hmm. feeling more abundant, more peaceful, more grounded, more like you know yourself, your true core self, and more like that core self that is now burgeoning from within you is a reflection of your higher self.
Yes. And I'm just a big believer that flow and abundance does not come to those who are constantly in suffering or holding on to pain.
Yes.
It comes to those that have peace, who have clarity, who are relaxed, in a more relaxed state.
Yeah.
And that may seem like a nice thing to say, but if you're in your 30s and 40s and you've got 3 kids and you've got, you know, responsibilities and job and you're overstressed and you're thinking, I don't have 2 years of my life, let alone 30 minutes a day to go to the gym. How can I do this work when I have so much responsibilities, when I've got, you know, a partner that I'm in a relationship with, I've got kids, I've got bills, I've got all these different weights on top of me. Doing this type of work seems like impossible. What do you say to someone like that?
It isn't. It actually is really doable, because the work requires for you to bake it into your life. It's not work that is a task apart from the rest of your life.
It is your life.
It is your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the work can actually, the way that I like to structure the work is to make it very accessible. And the reason why I like to make it accessible to anyone is because I want people to do the work. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it as easy as possible. I've gotten that statement so many times. Well, you know, I'm a mother of three and, you know, they're all really young, and how am I going to find the time? I always tell people, listen, you have 1,440 minutes in the day. If you take 5 of those minutes and do a breath work practice, you're already ahead of the game.
Wow.
And if you do that for an entire year, 365 days, what we know, what neuroscience is telling us, is that it takes an approximate 300 to 400 repetitions of a nervous system restoration practice for our body memory to start shifting.
Really?
So if you take those 365 days, that year of those 5 minutes, you're already doing work that is going to be monumentally effective in you feeling more settled and like your nervous system is actually experiencing a lot of ease and calm that it wasn't experiencing before you did the year.
And how much is our partners in an intimate relationship picking up on our nervous system wounds and also our kids picking up just by watching and observing us and being around us? How much do others pick up our pain?
It's almost instantaneous. And especially the people that are closest to us, but especially children, because children are very, very keen on picking up on nonverbal cues. We actually, when we're like infants, that's the way that we understand whether or not the world is safe or not. We actually see the facial expression of an adult that's our caregiver. And if the facial expression is one that mirrors safety, calm, and ease, then what we interpret that as is the world is safe, I can be calm. If the adult feels preoccupied, angry, right? Like babies pick up on that and their nervous system is also picking up on that. And so it's important for us to actually be more attuned to the ways in which other people also pick up our energy and perhaps that can offer more motivation for people to actually do the nervous system practices that can actually be helpful for them and their families.
If a parent is watching or listening to this right now and they're thinking, wow, my kids are 5 or 12 or 16 and I'm just starting to realize that maybe I was too reactive based on my nervous system wounds or for many years, or maybe we shouldn't have yelled at each other as parents, you know, in front of our kids, or we shouldn't have been so reactive in situations that we were explosive and we didn't need to be. And they're starting to realize, oh, okay, this could have some long-term effects on kids. And they've been living that way for a decade with their kids growing up. What can they instantly tell themselves right now about how they've shown up? And what are some actions they can take to start breaking the cycle for themselves and their kids who still have developing minds, who maybe aren't as comfortable talking about emotions yet because they're younger still? How can they start shifting that without thinking, I've ruined my kids' lives?
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You know, it's important for parents, for anyone really, to understand if I didn't know better, I couldn't do better. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't know that what you were struggling with was intergenerational trauma because you were exhibiting toxic relationship behaviors that were reflected in your childhood home, and you absorb those as the norm, as a status quo, then you wouldn't know to actually disrupt those and not pass those on or not, you know, exhibit those in your home. However, it's important that if you now do know better, that you take action, that you decide, okay, I know that there's a different way, and I understand that the way that I've been behaving is unhealthy. Nice. Let me shift. That is already a step in the right direction. When it comes to children, it's important to understand that children can also engage in the healing process.
They can.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of age-appropriate ways in which we can integrate the work with children. Children can meditate. Children can do breath work. Children can talk about their emotions. Children can, you know, do dance parties with their parents that actually help them to release some of the stress and tension of the day. And all of that can be a large part of what families can do together to actually do some collective healing and engage in age-appropriate types of practices that can help their children not only absorb the healing in the moment, but also understand for the long term, for the entirety of their lives, that they can do something that can help them to heal.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I believe that stress is the major source of our illness.
Really?
Over and above diet, genetics, even treatment. It's a very big statement. And that stress, though, is psychological, right? Events don't cause stress. What causes stress are the views you take of the event. So if you open it up and you're more mindful, and if you said to yourself, rather than this thing is going to be awful, give yourself five reasons why it might actually be an advantage. So now it could be awful, could be advantageous. You're immediately somewhat relaxed. But I say go the next step. Let's assume it does happen. What are the advantages?
The worst case scenario.
And what are the advantages? And so then when you say, you know, you'll be able to deal with whatever happens, then you're less worried about them.
Yes.
And, you know, you don't have to spend so much time trying to control the outcome.
Mm.
Next. But for the big things that are happening in this world right now, I think that it's a super test of all that I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. You know. How do you manage stress, though?
I don't experience that most of the time.
Really?
You're a professor at Harvard. You've got books. You've got people that rely on you. You see, you know, people coming to you with their problems. How do you navigate all that?
Yeah. I surely, at this age, have had real things happen. I had a fire that destroyed 80% of what I owned way back when. You know, my mother died when she was a young woman. I'd been, you know, divorced. And so none of those things sound so big anymore. But nevertheless.
In the moment.
So, and when those things happen, I don't think that my response is, oh, well, you know, I'm of this earth.
Sure.
But it doesn't stay with me. So let's say when I wrote about this in The Mindful Body, when the house went up in smoke, that I called the insurance adjuster. He came over the next day, and he said it was the first time in his 25 years of the job where the call was less bad than the damage. Most people go, oh, my God, and they get there. Eh, it's not
one little
terrible
room, yeah.
And here, but, you know, to my mind, it was already gone. What was the point in getting crazy over it? And I immediately felt that what had been burned were things of my past, you know. So if I were to redo it today, you know, that day, how many of those things would I have bought again or what have you? But it was still a little scary.
Sure.
But I might as well tell the whole story now because this turned out to be wonderful.
Really?
How could it have been wonderful?
Tell me.
Okay, so I go to the Charles Hotel to live now because I don't have a house. And I have my two dogs. And so I'm a sight to be seen, right? You know, marching. Okay. It's Christmas.
Wow.
Christmas Eve, I go out. I come back, and my room is full of gifts. Not from the hotel management, not from the hotel owner, but from the so-called little people. The people who parked my car, the chambermaids, the waiters and waitresses. It was years that when telling the story, I would cry. Now I've told it so many times. And I don't remember, except for one thing, anything that I lost in the fire. But every Christmas, I'm reminded of what I think is the basic goodness of people.
Wow.
So
why did they give you all those gifts?
Just to be nice, because it was Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah, and they knew what had happened.
And if you would have lived in the home, you wouldn't have had that experience.
That's true, too. I hadn't realized that. But the funny thing is, so the one thing that I miss, and I set that up for you to say, well, what was that one thing? I was teaching a large course in a few weeks. All of my notes were burnt. What was I going to do?
Oh, man.
So I called the student from the year before who got an A, and I borrowed her notes. It was like a game of telephone.
That's great.
And I apologized to the class before telling them that I don't know how this is going to go, you know, following reason. And I think it was the best class that I taught.
Really?
Because it was happening right then, you know, that all of the information I was giving them was a new version, or a version that I believed right at this moment. You know, when you present PowerPoints, it's just too easy not to use the same PowerPoints, right. And to, you know, you don't want to think things through.
So you're innovating things. Yeah. You're adding.
And so
to
I enjoyed it more than any other class I'd taught.
This is fascinating. Now, you're speaking about kind of lost things from the past. A lot of people hold on to the traumatic memories, and it keeps them stuck in a mindset of resentment, fear, anxiety, frustration, guilt, whatever it might be from these traumatic experiences that either happened to them, that they interpreted, or that they were a part of or did to other people. And they hold on to these memories and put a lot of meaning on those memories. And it causes them to feel stuck or gain weight or get sick and have anxiety. How powerful is our thoughts around the past?
Well, I think that what we need to do, and people, there's data, not mine, that shows trying not to think about something is totally ineffective. It always comes back. But so what you want to do is not try not to think about it, but to think about it differently.
Interpret it differently.
Yeah. And your feelings will be based on your interpretations. You know, so that for me, the fire, you know, was not the scary thing. It, you know, so I lost some things. So who cares?
Right.
And then I got all of this attention, this feeling of the goodness of strangers.
Community, you know, love, support. Yeah.
And so it's not a scary thing for me. Wow. So if we open up our minds and see that no matter what we're experiencing, there are multiple ways of understanding it. There is no one way of looking at it. And that's what we do when we're being mindless, you know. And then it lends itself to, again, all sorts of possibilities. You know, it occurs to me that we only talked about the counterclockwise study. I probably, with your permission.
Go ahead. Okay, yeah, sure.
Because there are many in the book, but to be more persuaded of this mind-body unity.
Yes.
Let's see, the next study in that series was with chambermaids, which is
this
fun.
Is awesome, yeah.
The chambermaids, I didn't realize this until we did the study, don't see their work as exercise, because the Surgeon General says exercise is what you do after work. You sit in a chair all day, that's when you get your exercise. And they're just too tired after work. Study was so simple, as many of these are, my studies. We just taught them that their work is exercise. Mm. So making a bed is like working on this machine at the gym, sweeping. And so now we have two groups, one group that doesn't realize their work is exercise, one group that now sees that their work is exercise. We take many measures. Turns out they're not working any differently, with these two different views.
Right, right.
They're not eating any differently. All that's changed is their mindset. Now work is exercise. As a result of that change, they lost weight. There was a change in waist to hip ratio, body mass index, and their blood pressure came down.
Wow.
You know, so our thoughts matter. I'll go to the very present, because there's so many things for us to talk about. I did this study recently with my graduate student, Peter Ungel, and it's a study on wound healing.
Oh,
now, so
this is interesting.
In order to test the one's mind, the degree to which your mind affects healing.
The physical body.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
We had to inflict a wound.
Really?
I am not sadistic.
Right, right.
And even if I were, the Human Subjects Committee is not going to let me. So it's a minor wound.
Sure.
But it's a wound.
A little cut, a little paper cut or something.
No, we
like
used the Chinese cupping.
Okay.
So it creates it. Okay. And all we have are people in front of a clock.
It's like a bruise almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
exactly. Unbeknownst to them, the clock is going twice as fast as real time, half as fast as real time, or real time. And the question we're asking is, does that bruise heal based on perceived time, which is the time the clock tells you, or real time? And it turns out it's perceived time.
Come on.
Yeah. And we're doing this now with people who've had hernia operations, cataract surgery. I want to do with broken bones as well, where we tell people, right now, you know, the doctor will probably tell you, say, how long is it going to take for me to heal?
3 to 6 months.
Right.
For
and I think they use the outer limit. I want to tell people, you know, some people have healed as quickly as, and give the quickening healing time. and see what happens.
Interesting.
So if a doctor who is a credible expert and is telling you this is going to take 3 to 6 months of recovery, it's
going
to
be a long, you're not going to do anything until 3 or 6 exactly
of recovery.
Right.
You're just going to wait until that end time and then start feeling better. So you're saying what if a doctor said, you know, it's possible you could heal in 2 to 4 weeks and start seeing incredible healing fast if you do these certain things. Do you think the body could connect to our thinking and our belief
I think
that
it's
way?
One. It's one. So it will necessarily be connected. You know, so in the back of, after I talked about in the book about all these mind-body unity studies, I give a treatment that we've come up with that essentially, you know, but I want to, let me backtrack a little bit. Most people know about placebos. Mm-hmm. Like, placebos may be our strongest medicine. I mean, just think about it. You take a sugar pill, you take a nothing, and then
you
get better.
Better. Yeah.
So it's not the pill, you're doing it yourself. So my life's work has been to try to find out how to do this more directly. And what I'm just going to tell you is a procedure that seems to work and that could explain placebos and other things as well. But it's the answer to your question. Okay, so if you have 3 weeks to heal and now you're, you know, approaching the second week has passed, what are you doing? And this is what you might be doing. When people are given a diagnosis of a chronic disease, they tend to think that the symptoms are going to stay the same or get worse. Nothing moves in only one direction. Mm. There are always little blips. It's sort of like the stock market. If it's going up, it doesn't go straight up. It goes up, goes down a little up, okay? Or down, depending on.
Sure, sure.
Okay. And it's the same thing with any measure you're going to take over time. There are fluctuations. Now, what happens is there are times you're feeling better, but you're not paying any attention to those times, all right? Because your expectation is it's only going to get worse. What happens if you pay attention? So what we do, we start by calling people every day, twice a day, sometimes 3 times a day at various times. And we say, let's say you have chronic pain, for example. Nobody needs stress, it doesn't matter what it is. People in chronic pain think they're in pain all the time. Mm-hmm. People who are stressed think they're stressed. Nobody is anything all the time. So we call and say, how is it right now? Is it better or worse than before? And why? The why is the crucial question. All right, so what happens is now, during many times, it's going to be better. So you're going to feel, gee, you know, it's not as bad as I thought it was. There are moments of relief. Why initiates a mindful search? Why now is it better than before? And by doing this, the process now gives you some control over the disease. So control itself is important to your health.
Interesting.
When you're in control, you're looking for ways to be better.
To improve, yeah.
Right. So we use the stress. So you're stressed all the time. I call you, Hastri. Okay. Then all of a sudden you realize, you know, when you're talking to Ellen Langer, then you're maximally stressed. So then it's easy, right? Don't talk to me as a way of improving, all right? So three things happen when you do this attention to variability, which is just a fancy way of saying being mindful, noticing change. The first is that you see, hey, it's not that you're maximally awful all the time. Second, by asking why you're being mindful, that's good for your health. Mm-hmm. And third, that you're more likely to find a solution if you're looking for one. Now, we've done this with Parkinson's, stroke, multiple sclerosis, arthritis, chronic pain, a host of real disorders. And in each case, we get very positive results. And so, you know, now we're looking at how this might actually explain the placebo. And the way is that you take a pill, now you're expecting yourself to get better. So you're looking, am I better? Oh, now I'm not as better as I was before. Why? And the process unfolds naturally. Now, so when I was trying to arrange it so people could take care of themselves rather than rely on a doctor to give them a nothing so that they take care of themselves, it doesn't seem that way because we're calling them, but most people now have smartphones. It's very easy. You set your smartphone to ring in an hour. You ask yourself, how is it now? Better or worse than before, set it now for 2 hours and 10 minutes, just vary the time. And you will be better, even if it doesn't completely go away, although we have very positive and very positive findings.
This is powerful.
You know, and the thing about a placebo that's kind of interesting, because when we, the BBC did a version of a replication of the counterclockwise study. And I remember there was this actress who was one of the participants, and she got better and she couldn't understand it. And she said, you know, you say it's placebo, but, you know, and arguing because placebos are bad. Now, placebos to people are bad only because the people who started talking about them were pharmaceutical companies. And for a pharmaceutical, I want to bring this drug to market to make a fortune. And this damn thing, you know, this placebo is just as good. So then I can't bring it to market. But if you think about it, and then people say, it's only psychological, as if, wait a second. You know, physical is real, you know, psychological not. And now I'm saying they're both the same.
So what influences the other? Do our thoughts influence?
It's all happening more or less simultaneously.
Really?
Yeah.
So you know, we feel pain somewhere, we feel overwhelm or stress, or we feel a sharpness of pain somewhere. Is our thoughts influencing that pain, or is our the feeling of it influencing our thoughts?
It's one thing.
Interesting.
You know, I raise my arm, that's affecting my wrist, my forearm. You know, it's all happening essentially at the same time. You know, there was somebody, I can't believe that I couldn't find who did this study, where they did the biochemistry of a teardrop, and that a teardrop of sadness is biochemically different from a teardrop of happiness.
Really?
And remember the iridologist, who was able to look in my eye and know there was something wrong with my gallbladder. It's all the same. I go like this, my brain is different. We don't have the sophisticated machinery, technology, to pick up the difference. But if I took a few cells of your skin and you were mindful versus mindless, the difference is there.
Really?
But we can't see that now.
Holy cow.
No.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
This is fascinating. What would you say then if people want to live pain-free? If they want to live pain-free, stress-free, and they want to feel like they're aging gracefully.
All in 1 minute.
what can they be? What is the cocktail of ingredients that you should be doing on a daily basis to create
You should accept that everything is uncertain. Mm-hmm. And so then you can't know those things. You know, if you forget something, doesn't mean now you're becoming getting dementia. Mm. You know, you forgot something. And it's interesting because I'm a teacher, I'm a professor of these wonderful students at Harvard, and I give an exam and they get a lot of it wrong. They studied it, they just didn't remember. So young people are not infrequently forgetful. Mm. They just don't worry so much about being forgetful. If you fall, some people then take themselves out of the world, you know, because they're afraid of falling again. And I remember in this, I was consulting in this nursing home many years ago, and this woman who was, I was in the director's office, and this woman who was about, I'd say she was about 85 or whatever, visiting her sister who was 90. And she was bragging. She said, you know, my sister wanted me to bring tongs to help her put on her underwear by herself. But I wasn't going to do it because she could fall. And I thought, okay. And then I chimed in, which I probably shouldn't. And I said, you know, we can prevent her from falling and burning herself or anything else that happens to people in the course of a lifetime. We can induce a semi-comatose state. And then she'll be perfectly accident-free and so on. You know, so in some sense, I mean, it may seem silly, but some part of being human is the possibility of some of these things happening.
Falling, yeah.
And recognizing that you can get yourself through it in some of the ways we've already discussed. I'm not suggesting that we all, you know, just throw caution to the wind, but right. I think a life that provides no opportunity for any of these things to happen, it wouldn't be one that I would sure. choose for myself.
People are sick and they want to heal. But why do you think so many people struggle to feeling whole and healing when there seems to be the answer to how to do it, but people continue to struggle with their health? Why do you think that is?
Well, there's a lot of things to unpack there. We have three types of stress that we process in the physical body. We have physical stress, that's like trauma, accidents, injuries, falls. And then you have chemical stress, like toxins or pesticides or pollutants or viruses or bacteria or hangovers or nutritional deficiencies. And then you have emotional stress, right? And emotional stress could be family tragedies, car accidents, second mortgages, single parenting, 401ks, you know, whatever that is. But each one of those things, physical, chemical, or emotional, knock the body out of homeostasis, out of regulation, out of balance. The innate capacity of the body when it's not overstressed is that it wants to always return back and regulate. It wants to return back to homeostasis. It wants to return back to order. And that's kind of innate in us. That's an automatic process that's running through the autonomic nervous system. So we could say the job of the autonomic nervous system is to create balance and regulation and homeostasis, and it's automatic, right? And that part of the brain sits under the thinking neocortex, and it's called the chemical brain or the emotional brain or the limbic brain or the mammalian brain. And it has all of those functions that make blood sugar balanced, hormone levels, digestive enzymes. It's doing what it can to take the body and constantly repair it and regenerate it and move it back into balance. All of those stressors knock the brain and body out of balance, and the innate mechanism, the stress response, brings it back to balance. Well, it just makes sense. If you keep knocking it out of balance over and over again, and you keep moving it out of homeostasis, that imbalance is going to become the new balance, and now you're headed for a disease because that autonomic, automatic system can't regulate order in the body. So a system then is compromised. The system breaks down. And so if it's physical trauma, you know, your body can heal if you rest it. If it's chemical imbalance, you take your pharmaceuticals or you take your nutraceuticals, your vitamins, your minerals, your herbs, you intermittent fast, you do eat a vegan diet, you do anything you can to get the body back so that it's using more energy for growth and repair. So for some people, digestion consumes more energy than the process makes, right? So
really?
They're in a state of constant diminishing returns, right? So when the autonomic nervous system is out of balance and the digestive system is perceiving that there's a threat and danger all the time in the outer world, the person's living in fear, it's not a time to digest, right? So that system is compromised, right? So then they become very sensitized to the foods they consume because the response constantly from the environment is weakening the organism, right? So they're victim to the environment. So they're more susceptible to have food allergies or whatever it is. So then the person then goes to a diet where they consume less foods that require more energy to break down. So it's like taking a camel in the desert that's fallen and lifting all the packs off it, getting it back up, and then slowly adding the packs back on, right? So people do things to get the body back into chemical balance, and sometimes refining or changing their diet in some way. And there's, you know, thousands of options for that. You got to feel good about it, and you got to believe in it. But the big factor is emotional stress.
And yes.
Really, for the most part, 75 to 90% of every person that walks into a healthcare facility in the Western world walks in because of psychological or emotional stress.
That's really?
Pretty much 4 out of 5 people. What's really causing their health condition is that they're emotionally stressed and emotionally out of balance. Okay, so what are the emotions that are connected to the stress hormones? It's anger, it's hatred, it's violence, it's frustration, it's competition, it's control, it's judgment, it's envy, it's jealousy, it's insecurity, it's fear, it's anxiety, it's worry, it's angst, it's hopelessness, it's powerlessness, it's guilt, it's shame, it's unworthiness, you know. And psychology calls these normal human states of consciousness. These are altered states of consciousness. So our response to someone or something in our environment, or our response to our own thought, an image of what could happen in the future, a memory of the past, could actually cause chemicals to be secreted from the brain.
It's crazy.
That causes the body to actually believe it's living in that same environment of fear or danger. Right? So
what I'm hearing you say there, just so I'm correct, we can think a thought of our past memory, whether it's true or not, what happened.
And a
memory of something that we think happened. It may have happened. It may have been something that we continue to make up that happened, right? But a memory.
50% of that is a lie. So yeah, more than likely.
50% of our memories are lies.
Yeah, they're right? Not the truth. Yeah.
Right, right. Or they're expanded into something else, right?
They're embellished.
So we can think of a memory, a painful memory, and we can hold on to that thought. Or we can think about something we're worried about in the future that hasn't happened,
We could pick some worst case scenario and obsess about it.
And we can obsess about it. And just the thought alone could create an emotion that could make us sick. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, because that thought, when you're seeing that thought in your mind or remembering that image, it's the image and the emotion. It's the thought and the feeling. It's the stimulus and response that's immediately conditioning the body into that state of imbalance. So it's a scientific fact that the long-term effects of the hormones of stress push the genetic buttons and create disease. If you can turn on that stress response just by thought alone, your thoughts are literally going to make you sick. Okay.
Crazy.
So that's the greatest example of the mind-body connection. So the next fundamental question is, okay, if our thoughts can make us sick, is it possible that my thoughts could make me well? Well, if that's the case, then I'm going to have to manage my attention and I'm going to have to manage my energy, because where I place my attention is where I place my energy. And I'm going to have to inhibit that thought that has conditioned the body to subconsciously be the mind of that emotion. Mm. And the body's so objective that it does not know the difference between the real life experience that's creating that emotion and the emotion that person is fabricating by thought alone. To the body, it's exactly the same. So the body's believing it's being chased by a predator. The body's believing it's in an offensive situation where it has to attack. The body's believing it's constantly needing to be ready, and it's constantly out of homeostasis. It's constantly out of balance. It's in emergency. It's in fight or flight. It's a different system in the autonomic nervous system where you're stepping on the gas, where you're mobilizing enormous amounts of energy for some threat, some danger, real or imagined. But that thought and the feeling, the image, the emotion, the stimulus response is conditioning the body to automatically be the mind of that emotion. Mm. So then now the body becomes conditioned and addicted. Now this gets to be a problem because people get addicted to their own thoughts.
Mm-hmm. It becomes their personality, right?
It is their identity. And they become addicted to the life they don't even like, because their response to the coworker, to the boss, to the ex is actually giving them a rush of energy, a rush of adrenaline. And they're associating that rush of energy with some problem or condition in their life. And now come time to change and manage your attention and manage your emotion, it's no different than breaking addiction to anything. Mm-hmm. There's cravings. Mm-hmm. The body wants to return back to how it's been conditioned, into the familiar past, into the known.
Even if it's uncomfortable, painful, and a horrific feeling, why do we go back into that feeling?
Because we don't believe there's anything in the future.
Oh.
If we knew that the best way to create a future, really, is to change your state of being, then you would have to manage your attention on that thought and have to say, is this thought actually the truth? And how long am I going to keep thinking this thought and firing and wiring that circuit in the brain? So there's biology, because now it's an automatic program. It's a belief. Wow. A belief is just a thought you keep thinking over and over again until it becomes subconscious or unconscious. So to change then is to become so conscious of that unconscious thought, that unconscious belief, that it wouldn't slip by your awareness, unnoticed and checked. And now the body's in rehab. because it's overdosed. It's been on a bad trip. And the body, which has been conditioned to be the mind, is 95% of who we are, right, by the time we're in the middle of our life. So there's David and Goliath. And the body's just saying, look, you think you've been making all your decisions your whole life? Actually, you haven't. The body has been making these decisions because it's the mind. So then the body says, okay, Lewis, this is really good that you want to be kind and compassionate.
But that's not how you've been that, for 30, 40 years.
So the body says, let me just send some thoughts or some memories of the past that are going to just cause you to feel that emotion. So the body starts saying to the mind, you can, it's too hard, you'll never change, this is too uncomfortable, I don't like this, go back to make the same choice, do the same thing, create the same experience, feel the same emotion so that you can return back to the known. And that's how people seamlessly return back to that same identity. So back to the concept of health, physical balance. Okay, let's talk about that. What do you want to do? Interval training, you want to do yoga, you want to do Pilates, you want to do sprinting, you want to do running, you want to do weights, whatever it is. Get your body more physically balanced, and physical balance has to do with strength, flexibility, and endurance. Mm-hmm. And get those three in balance, right? So you want to do acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, whatever it is that you want to treat your body to honor it in that way. Get it back into physical balance. And there's no doubt in any one of these areas, you're going to have to stretch yourself outside of what you think you can do, because that's the only way you're going to change.
Yes.
So just when you think you've had enough, then go a little bit more. Stretch yourself out that way without hurting yourself,
right,
but do it with intention. Do it with assigning meaning to why you're doing that activity. Get the greatest value out of it. It works better when you do.
Yes.
Don't resist it. Get into it. Face off with whatever it is, the pain, the limitation, whatever, and just mark your progress and have it be something that you mindfully want to improve on. Do that, and your body will get stronger, get more flexible, and have more endurance. Okay? So take care of your body chemically, you know, get a blood test.
Yes.
I don't know. Do whatever you need to do to get it chemically back in the balance. If you're having these symptoms, then you're going to have to maybe start eliminating certain things and making different choices. Does that mean that stuff is bad? No. It means you're out of balance and it's bad for you. Mm. And don't make it a thing like you have to do it forever. Just understand why you're doing it. So take your nutrients and your vitamins and your minerals and understand why you're taking those things and do that with the intention.
Right.
Put a meaning behind it, you'll get a greater outcome.
But it sounds like if you take care of the physical and you take care of the chemical, you still might feel or be sick if you don't take care of
the
emotional.
That's exactly where I'm going. So get those two in order.
But you can do all the right things and still feel stressed and still feel sick.
No,
listen. Still feel like my brain and my body is not working and I feel exhausted and I feel drained, right?
Right, because your response to the environment and response to your own thoughts is weakening the organism. You're squandering energy. Okay, so do all the physical things, do all the chemical things, but be controlling, rigid, judgmental, self-judgmental. You know, get really over-focused on your food and get really over-focused on everything, but you're controlling everything in your life and you're living in fear. None of this is going to make much of a difference until you get your body back into homeostasis and balance emotionally, right? So why? Because the moment you return back to this same emotion, your body's so objective, it's believing it's living the same past experience. And you will behave as if you're in the past, and you will think as if you're in the past, and you're literally living your life from the past. And that's the way it is. And so it takes crisis, it takes trauma, it takes disease, diagnosis, loss, betrayal. So for people to finally go, I've had enough, right? Why wait, you know? So you do the organic diet, you do
the
intermittent fasting, you do the vegan, you do the gluten-free, you do the keto, you do your
supplements,
exercise.
Supplements, everything.
And but you're just controlling and rigid. You are going to take the signal to your cell, which is fear, and make organic fear proteins. That's what you're going to make.
Right.
And I take care of my body. I exercise. I eat well. I make great choices. But I know that if this component, and we have case histories of people that have healed themselves of ALS, of lupus, of cancer, that complete reverse, Parkinson's, complete reversal of their health condition. One person in 1 hour got bad news. In 1 hour, all of her symptoms came back. She went right back to the same emotion, signaled the same gene. If the environment signals the gene, according to epigenetics, and the end product of an experience in the environment is an emotion, then it makes sense then, as long as you feel that emotion, you're signaling the same gene and your body's believing it's living in the same environment. Seamlessly, you'll return back to the same health condition because you'll upregulate the genes and downregulate genes and you'll move your body back out of balance. And as I said, seamlessly, the condition in 1 hour came back. She couldn't get out of her car. She said, if I did it once, I could do it again. She just reversed the process and it's the second time she was able to do it again. She learned that nobody or nothing is worth it, justified or not. It's the only person we're hurting is ourselves, okay? So self-regulation, getting your autonomic nervous system back into balance and homeostasis is going to require then breaking the addiction to those emotions, and those emotions that are driving certain behaviors and thoughts that cause a person in an instant to say, I want to be healthy, I want to live for a long period of time, and then they go back to making the same choice because they return to the same emotion, and now they're back in the past. And
it's like you're fighting against what you really want, what you say you want,
right,
by living in this
because
past emotion.
Because you've got 95% programmed, working against 5% of your conscious mind that's saying, okay, have the intention. And you could say, I'm healthy, I'm wealthy, I'm immortal, whatever.
Abundant. Yeah,
yeah, and your body's saying, dude, you're miserable.
Right.
Dude, that thought never makes it past the brainstem to the body because that's not consistent with the emotion of the body because we only accept, believe, and surrender to the thoughts equal to our emotional state. We never accept and believe or surrender to any thoughts that are not equal to our emotional
wow.
state.
Wow. Can you wait? Can you say that one more time so people can fully understand that?
We only accept, believe, and surrender to the thoughts that are equal to our emotional state. We'll never accept, believe, and surrender any thoughts that are not equal to your emotional state. So you could say, I'm abundant, I'm eternal, I'll live forever, I'm healthy, I'm wealthy. And if you're programmed your body into that emotional state, it's going to say, you're not that.
It doesn't
you're
believe
miserable.
It. It doesn't believe it.
It only accepts the thoughts of suffering and misery because it's equal to that emotional state. So then here's the fundamental question. Okay, take a person whose identity is resentment.
Yes.
And their identity is anger and frustration and betrayal.
Uh-huh.
And you ask them, why are you this way? And they'll say, I'm this way because of this event that happened to me 15 years ago. Stronger the emotion we feel from some event, the more altered we feel inside of us, the more that chemical continuity is disrupted from something that surprises us, that alters our state, the more the brain freezes a frame and takes a snapshot. That's called a memory, right? But the problem is that we think about that event over and over again after it happens. We're producing the same chemistry in the brain and body as if the event was occurring. And so the body is conditioned literally into the past. So
we're living in the past.
So yes. The person says, so you say the person's resentful about everything. They're seeing their life through the lens of resentment and frustration and anger, and everything's upsetting them. Well, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. You say, okay, now it's an addiction. You got to change that. And the person goes, oh, okay, that makes sense. And now that you got to get out of the bleachers on the playing field and say, okay, these emotions could literally have something to do with my health. Just saying, if I stop feeling these emotions, what if I start feeling these emotions? Okay, what would be the emotions that would make me happy? These emotions are making me feel really bad. The memories are making me feel really bad. Can I remember a future? How would I feel if my future could happen? I got to trade those emotions for different emotions. Well, if I've been practicing feeling these emotions and I've conditioned my body to be the mind, it's going to take some time for me to start making different chemistry with the intention of making that chemistry, getting my body back into homeostasis and balance, work on my breath. When I breathe, I change my state, practice breathing, work with your body so it can start to relax so that it feels safe enough to feel something other than that again. And if it takes you 3 weeks, it would be worth it.
Absolutely.
Right?
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
So then person then starts, okay, I don't really know how to feel gratitude. Okay, well, maybe start going out and giving and give to people. I promise you, start giving, start feeling grateful. And then start practicing feeling gratitude. Teach your body just for 15 minutes a day what it would like to feel gratitude, what it would be like. And our data shows that you take someone to do that for 4 days, three times a day, they make a immunoglobulin called immunoglobulin A. It's your body's natural flu shot. It's the greatest immune chemical we have. 50% increase in the subjects we studied in 4 days. Immunoglobulin A, up 50% in 4 days. Where is that chemistry coming from? They're not taking anything. It's coming from within them, right?
No supplements, no injections, nothing. No topicals.
No. Just their body's, their just autonomic nervous system is manufacturing a pharmacy of chemicals that's causing an immunity to the body.
Wow.
Right? So now a person practices feeling gratitude, okay? What is the emotional signature of gratitude? When you receive something, or you just receive something, when something wonderful happened to you or something wonderful is happening to you, you feel grateful.
Yes.
So the emotional signature of gratitude is something just wonderful happened, or right. Something is happening
joyful,
to me.
It's, yeah,
but
exciting,
you're in a state of
yeah.
receivership.
Yes.
You've just received something, right? So the emotional signature of gratitude is received, right? So now if you're in a state of gratitude, it makes total sense. Then you will accept, believe, and surrender the thoughts that are equal to that emotional state. And you could actually program your autonomic nervous system to make the pharmacy of chemicals that causes growth and repair to happen in the body.
Wow.
And that's exactly what we're discovering. So then when people understand what they're doing, and they understand why they're doing it, the how gets easier.
Mm.
So you can assign meaning to the task and switch on the prefrontal cortex. And when you switch on that prefrontal cortex, it wants to get an outcome. It doesn't want to mess around. It wants the outcome. You're doing it for the outcome. And that's kind of a strong intention and a change in energy or an emotional state. And that's changing your state of being.
Mm.
And when you change your state of being like that every day, get ready. Because you're going to start having synchronicities and opportunities and coincidences and weird things start happening in your life to prove to you that you're actually the creator of your life instead of the victim of your life.
Absolutely. Gosh, there's so much I want to unpack here. One of them is you mentioned something around 75 to 90% of people go into the doctor's office and it's based on an emotional imbalance that probably causes or influences them to be there, right? They might feel physical pain, but it's based on an emotional state that they've been in for a long time
mm-hmm.
that gets
and
them.
And a host of bad choices and a lot of that things. May go
yeah,
with
yeah.
that.
But a lot of it is emotional mm-hmm. as a baseline.
That's exactly correct.
You talked about frequency, we talked about emotional signatures, and we talked about identity and personality. When I went to your advanced 7-day experience, when I went there, you had an entire, I don't know, probably a few hour explanation about frequencies and energies. The highest level frequency where we could be at to allow us to feel more abundant and peaceful and have balance and harmony, to lower level frequencies that are going to cause us to feel more stress and anger and, you know, feel like we're in constant breakdown, right? And the higher the frequency we get to, the more conscious we are, the lower the frequency, the more unconscious we are. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing, you know, hours of research and science that you teach during this. What is the lowest level of emotion that will keep us stuck in a non-receivership, a non-abundant mentality and state, and a place of pain versus the highest level of emotion that we could be in more frequently that will allow us to feel more peace and in harmony in our health, but also in our life? What are those two opposite emotions?
Okay. I just want to finish the last thought about physical, chemical, and emotional stress. I want to answer that. So if you're truly interested then in sustaining homeostasis and balance, then you're going to have to self-regulate.
Yes.
And it would be wonderful. And we're working, we have this new program called the Inner Health Coalition, because we've had so many doctors, so many researchers, so many healthcare providers come through our events. Many of them heal themselves from all kinds of health conditions, from spinal cord injuries to stage four cancers, that really just want to really look to see how this model could actually fit in their clinic. And there's got to be a different conversation that can happen around health, because chronic health conditions are created from a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And if you don't change your lifestyle, nothing is going to change, because nothing changes in our life until we change. So then, if then you would go to a practitioner where you could actually practice brain and heart coherence, which is our formula. Mm-hmm. Get your brain feeling those elevated emotions, get your heart feeling those elevated emotions, and then get your brain coherent and do the exercises to get your brain and body back into regulation, into homeostasis. And then the key element is not that you react. I mean, who doesn't react? The question is...
You're perfect, Dr. Joe. You never react, right?
Yeah. The question is, how long?
Right.
How long are you going to do that for? I mean, if you keep it going on, then it must be an addiction, because an addiction is something you think you can't stop. Mm. Or knowing something isn't good for you and you do it anyway. That's when you know you're addicted, right? So then get the patient to really work on the emotional states that are keeping them and their body in the past.
But it's so hard for people, I feel like, right?
Yeah, because up until recently, there haven't been a whole lot of scientifically proven formulas or ways to teach people how to do that. People by nature want to get over their emotional state. They've just been hypnotized. They've been programmed. They've been conditioned into using something outside of them to take away this feeling inside of them.
To numb the pain.
Yeah, to it's nothing wrong with
it. Distract, numb.
But you could go watch a movie, or you could do this, you can do that, you can do all these different things, go out to dinner, just to make the feeling away. But the problem is, the feeling always comes back.
Right.
And so now when the person reaches that point where they're saying nothing's making this feeling go away, this is game time. This is where the person's not responding to texts any longer.
Right.
They don't want to go to dinner with the same people. They don't want to do the same things. They don't watch the same TV show. They want to get on the computer any longer. This feeling is disturbing them. Nothing's making it. No drug, no shopping spree, no sports car. No, nothing's making this feeling go away. This is a key moment, right? Because now the person is going to start to realize that no one or nothing in their life is going to make this feeling go away but them.
Right.
And this is the key moment. This is where the person really decides to change. This is the, because they can see themselves for the first time, because they no longer feel like themselves. They're no longer distracted by that. They can see how they think. They can notice how they've been acting and decide, oh my God, I don't want to do that anymore. The choices they've made, or the experiences they just want to no longer do, and the feelings that they no longer want to feel, right? And they start breaking their emotional agreements with everybody and everything in their life. And people really get worried because they're no longer predictable. They're not showing up as the memory of themselves, right? So what do? You medicate them. The person's depressed. You know, they're in a midlife crisis. But really, it's the soul saying, there's a future. And you may not know what it is, but you can't go back to that.
Right.
You just can't go back any longer. You can't. You already know. You can predict everything that's going to happen. You got to start saying no, or you got to start looking deep, or you got to start changing. And this is where it's so important for people then to understand that this is not a bad thing. This is actually a good thing. It just doesn't feel good any longer because you're ready to change, right? So this is what we should be naturally doing. So when the person says, oh my God, I want to feel something else in my life than this. Okay, I'm going to watch how I respond to my coworker. I'm going to watch how I respond to my own thoughts. When did I default today and return back to the old self? And they get really serious about looking closely at how they can change the way they think, act, and feel. And we have so many testimonials of people that were diagnosed with chronic health conditions, and they got themselves in their meditations back into elevated emotional states and change their energy and change their frequency. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. But then they get up from their meditation and they spend the next 15 hours in fear and frustration.
Why is that though?
Because they went unconscious, they defaulted. So you got to get so good at doing it with your eyes closed, you got to start doing it with your eyes open.
Oh man.
And that's the big game.
That's the game, that is the game.
That is the game, right? Because this is the plane of demonstration. You got to demonstrate now. So you got to start, that's why the walking meditations are so important in our work, because you got to walk as it. If you're going to be relaxed in your heart and awake in your brain, you better do it with your eyes open. So let's practice with
our
eyes.
There's
no other way to do it. You want to get so good at it that you can do it in the most adverse situations. That's, you know, when you own it, right? So then the person then realized that she had to watch her response to her ex. She had to watch her response to her bank account. She had to watch her response to the news. All of those things, she didn't, no drug, no surgery, no chemo, no radiation, no diet, no supplements were taking her health condition away. And so she realized I had to change, right? Uh-huh. So now she noticed doing her meditations, her pain levels went down. She noticed she was sleeping better. She noticed she had more energy, but her values for that health condition were still the same. And she said, it's not that this doesn't work. She wasn't doing her meditations any longer to heal. She was doing her meditations to change.
Mm.
And so then she'd say, okay, what do I want to believe today? What thought do I want to fire and wire in my brain? Let me remember it. I got to keep remembering it so I don't forget to think this way. And a belief is just a thought you keep thinking over and over again. So she wanted to hardwire that in her brain. She wanted that to be a new voice in her head.
Because thoughts that wire together.
Fire together and wire together, right? So then how am I going to behave? Closing your eyes and rehearsing how you're going to be with your ex. And literally thinking there's got to be another way to be. I can't respond the way I have responded. It's only weakening me. I got to change my state. Okay, I'm going to be loving. Let me rehearse it. Mental rehearsal. If you keep doing it, rehearsing yourself in the scene, planning your behaviors, your brain will look like you already did it.
Mm.
And if you keep doing it, it's going to become more automatic. It's going to become like a software program. So the brain looks like the experience has already happened. And now you have hardware and software in place to use when you're with your ex, because you installed it, right? So now you're doing the meditation to remind yourself who you no longer want to be and remind yourself who you do want to be. So now, okay, the person's now behaves that way, and now her response to her ex is different. Evolution that day, and the body's no longer brought back to the past, and she does it once, and she wants to do it again. She wants to get better at it, and she starts healing. Then she says, I got to stay in this emotional state. I don't care who it is or what it is. Let me close my eyes. I'm going to feel this emotion 100 times if I have to, just so that I can feel it so many times that I can bring it up whenever I want. Now they're becoming familiar with a new state of being, right? And when you feel the emotion of your future before it happens, you'll always believe in that future.
Wow.
And if you feel the emotion that keeps you connecting in your past, you'll believe in your past. And that's just the way it is. And then you return back to the same self, your same biology, thinking the same thoughts, making the same choices, doing the same things, creating the same experiences, feeling the same emotions. In your biology, your neurocircuitry, your neurochemistry, your hormones, your gene expression all stays the same because you just return back to the same. Okay, so we said 7 days. Take a group of people, is what I said to the scientists at University of California, San Diego. 7 days. The biology stays the same, and they all agreed. I said, give people new information. Combine quantum physics with neuroscience, with neuroendocrinology, with psychoneuroimmunology, with epigenetics, with electromagnetism. Build models of understanding. Get people to learn new information. They're going to have new thoughts. Now give them the instruction so they can make a new choice. They can do a new thing. They can create a new experience. They can feel a new emotion. Will their biology change in 7 days? Lo and behold, it changed way greater than we ever expected.
Wow.
Novice meditators, people who never came to a week-long event, never really meditated that much. The novice meditators, 7 days, their biology at the end of 7 days looked like they were living in a whole new life. And it wasn't, you know, 20% or 10%. It was the majority of the collective.
Hmm.
Now, all of those people have different genomes, different genotypes. And they're all different cultures, different races, different ages. But when we look at the biology of gene expression, they're signaling the same genes. They're making the same proteins. The collective, the herd, the flock, the school of fish, their biology, there's an emergent biology that's changing collectively. The probability of that happening is is it's insanely, insanely minimal. Let me just say that. So then think differently, make a different choice, do a different thing, create a new experience, feel a new emotion, keep doing that, your biology will change. And that's exactly how people heal. So the emotions that keep us, I would say, in our more limited animal, mammalian, human state have everything to do with anger and aggression, fear and anxiety and suffering and pain and guilt and shame and, you know, our
resentment.
All of those are your, think as energy, as emotion. So those emotions should ultimately be retired as wisdom, because the memory without the emotional charge is wisdom. And now the game is over and you're ready for a new experience, and you can't go to the future holding on to the emotion of the past, right? So you got to overcome that emotional state. So then you start feeling gratitude, you start feeling more gratitude, you start feeling love, you start feeling more love, you start feeling kindness, you start feeling care, you start feeling appreciation, you start feeling creative, you start feeling inspired, you practice feeling those emotions, and you get that heart of yours back into balance. We discover that once energy makes it to the heart, it's going right to the brain, and it's going to go straight up, and it's going to tell the brain, in that moment, the heart is the creative center. It's safe to create.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode and it inspired you on your journey towards greatness. Make sure to check out the show notes in the description for a full rundown of today's episode with all the important links. And if you want weekly exclusive bonus episodes with me personally, as well as ad-free listening, then make sure to subscribe to our Greatness Plus channel exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Share this with a friend on social media and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Let me know what you enjoyed about this episode in that review. I really love hearing feedback from you, and it helps us figure out how we can support and serve you moving forward. And I want to remind you, if no one has told you lately, that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And now it's time to go out there and do something great.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.